So tonight we're on the Sunday night meeting, we're in chapter 6, Into Action. I didn't find the chapter on Into Thinking. It's not in this book. And I don't know why they broke up How It Works and Into Action exactly, but we just finished How It Works, which is chapter 5. And in How It Works, we get the How It Works preamble, we get the 12 steps, but then we get the two requirements for step 3, and then the decision that we make in step 3. And the requirement that I have to be convinced that my life run on self-will did not work, and that I have to stop playing God. And then we have the step 3 prayer, which we all know, and then we have the warning after the prayer. Remember that we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready to abandon ourselves completely to God. And then we have the instructions on step 4 to find the blockages from God. And we look at the manifestations of self. When we're in self-centered, we have wrong thinking and we have resentment, fear, and we have wrong conduct. We looked at those. I think we probably spent about 6 or 8 weeks on that. We went through How It Works, and we went through the resentments, fears, and the sex inventory in detail. And they're all on the site. The book's a textbook, and so we've come a long way since the beginning. The first chapter is on Doctor's Opinion, remember, which tells us the problem. I have a phenomenon of craving and an allergy to alcohol. I have the phenomenon of craving, which is my allergy to alcohol. Anybody else have that in the room? That means that no matter what I think, when I take a drink, I don't know what's going to happen. And then I have loss of choice to drink because my mind tells me when I get irritable, restless, and discontent, which is really how an alcoholic sober is, that I can't stop from seeking the ease and comfort of alcohol. And then once I do that, the phenomenon of craving kicks in, and then it goes over all over again. So that's the first chapter, tells us what's wrong with us. Bill's story, of course, is the powerful story of someone who had this disease. How alcohol defeated him completely, how he was sent a messenger from God, Abby Thatcher, and how he worked the steps in Towns Hospital. And this was in 1934. And then we just finished that on the Saturday morning meeting. And then he takes the steps and he has a spiritual experience, and then he immediately wants to see how he can help other alcoholics. And we're here today because after 6 months he found Bill W. And in May of 1935, and he found Dr. Bob in May of 1935, and then we're here today. And then There's a Solution, talks about the solution. It finishes up with the problem of not having the power of control to drink, and then it talks about the power of choice. And then on page 24, it tells us that we have no defense against the next drink. We cannot recall with sufficiently the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago. We have no power not to drink. Anybody ever have that problem? And that's on page 24, and then I don't know how they figured it out, but the next page right across of it is the solution. They describe the spiritual solution. They give the promises of the solution. Then they describe how we got the solution from Dr. Carl Jung in Switzerland, and how he told Roland Hazard about the solution. Roland went there for a year to learn how not to drink. He was very wealthy. They didn't know where to send him. He found Switzerland. Dr. Jung was one of the three most preeminent psychiatrists in the world. Dr. Jung worked with him for a whole year. And Roland said, I understand the workings of my mind perfectly. And he went out and he got drunk. Some people say 3 days, some people say 5 days. And then he came back to see Dr. Jung, and Dr. Jung said, I didn't realize that you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. There's no hope for you. Roland says, really? I don't want to hear that. Give me another shot. So he says, well, and this is where we got the solution, that there is a situation through history where people get a change in their whole personality. They get a spiritual rearrangement of their ideas and attitudes towards life. It changes their whole personality. He says they're phenomenon, but they do happen. So Roland says, well, I'll go to church. He says, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something different, some spiritual change in these people. So they They go from their self-centered to a spiritual-centered way of living. So Roland went to New York, and he went to the Oxford Group, and he met Reverend Shoemaker, and then Ebbie Thatcher came there, and then Ebbie, after 30 days, they said, you need to witness to somebody, and he went to Bill W., and then we're here today. And then the next chapter, they know we're not going to want to do the steps. So they have a whole chapter there on more about alcoholism to try to hammer home the idea that right before I drink, sober, I cannot see the truth about alcohol. That before, when sober, living sober, separated from God, and I get irritable, restless, discontent, I cannot say drinking is a bad idea. It won't occur to me. I'll say at 10 in the morning, I'm never going to drink again. I've had enough. I'm sick of this. And then at 10:30, I'm in the liquor store. Well, how'd that happen? They hammer home the idea, they call it the queer mental twist before the first drink. And as explained to me, and I think it's true for me and others, that right before I want to take that drink, willpower won't work. My mind won't work because I won't see anything wrong with the drinking. My mind will tell me it's okay. I will only think about what alcohol is going to do for me, not to me. And I can't bring it into consciousness. And they give us three or four examples in that powerful chapter. And then on page 43, it ends saying, once again, the alcoholic on his own, there's no human power that can relieve this. His power must come from a higher power. So then they get us ready for chapter to the agnostics, which is chapter 4. That should probably be read at every meeting. And the first page, they describe whether you're an alcoholic or not, and they tell you you're either going to have to live on a spiritual basis or else. And then they talk about our problem is lack of power, right? That's my dilemma. I don't have any power to change. I don't have any power to keep from not drinking. I don't have any power to fix this. And they say that's a dilemma because I don't know how to find the power. So then they have a very clever line. It says, where and how are we to find the power? And they said, that's what this book is all about. It has specific directions. That's why we study it. So where we find the power is then in that chapter, the agnostics. The power is inside of all of us, the fundamental idea of God. We block it out. And that by doing the analysis and by looking deeply, we can find God within inside of all of us. And they also have the only question you're supposed to ask in AA. There are two questions you're supposed to ask in AA. The first question is on page, I think, 22. It says, you've seen how sick we are. You're probably wondering how we got better. So they said, you're supposed to ask us, what do I do? And then they say the book answers that question specifically. Then the other question we have every day is, it says, when I became an alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I could not postpone or evade. I had to fearlessly face the proposition question that either God is or he isn't. God is either everything or nothing. What is my choice to be? And I make that choice every day. I wrote about it in the thoughts on self-reliance. When I choose me and not God, then I have fear. And then the self-centered fear triggers all sorts of problems in my life. And so, at the end of that chapter, the agnostic, they ask us one, they just tell you to do one thing in that chapter, change your mind. Change your mind about a power greater than you. And they ask the question in there, the second step is, are you willing to believe, or have you come to believe that there's a power greater than you that can solve your problem? And that's it, and that's step two. And then in how it works, they give us the 12 steps, which is the program of recovery. I'm a stickler, but I hear people talk all the time about they're in the program. Have you ever heard that? I love the program. Well, they're not talking about the program of recovery. They're talking about the fellowship. There's nothing wrong with that. We're going to read page 17 on Saturday, which it talks about the two powers, the power of the fellowship and the power of the program. But the program in AA is the 12 steps. AA is a program of recovery. So you can't either be in or out of the program, you're either doing it or not. And it's a program of recovery. Now the fellowship is separate, the program and then the fellowship. And at the end of the book, they say that we hope you'll join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. And when we talk about going to AA and we enjoy the meetings, we're talking about the spirit of the fellowship. But the fellowship of the Spirit was people who are doing the steps together, who are seeking God together, who are seeking to grow in the likeness of their Creator. That's how it's described in the 12 and 12. And so the program is laid out. Before we had the program, we had no solution. And then we started on steps 3 and 4. Now, step 3 is a decision, which is an action, but nothing changes. If I decide I want God to be my director, isn't that great? Well, I could say that all morning and then get in the car and run my life. It won't change me. I have to take actions to change and allow God to be my director. And step 4 is the beginning of that. And step 4 and 5 are separated here, but they can really be done together. But step 4 is where you look at the things that are blocking me from my Creator. And they give very specific instructions. We've gone through them. And when you have that information, you have a lot of information in step 4, then you take it to another human being and you take it to God. In step 4, you do learn a few things that are vital, at least for me. I learned how to forgive. I learned how to be free of anger. The prayers on page 66, 67. On 68, I learned with the freedom of, by asking God to free me from my fears and direct my attention to how I should be. I can be free of fear when I say the prayer and I direct my attention to how He would have me be. And then I also learned from my conduct how to make a sane ideal of my conduct in the future so I don't have to repeat it. Powerful stuff. And a lot of times, the way I do it, you can do it any you want. I go through the 4-step with the Spotsy, and we go through the resentments, and then we go through the fears, and then we go through the inventory. You can do it any way you want. But it's a lot of information. Now, I've heard people go to treatment, nothing wrong with treatment. They do a 4-step, and they're very happy and proud of it. And I say, that's great. And I say, what'd you learn? See, the 4-step is to learn certain things. Have you learned how to be free of your fear? Have you learned how to be free of your anger? Have you learned how to say the prayers so you don't have to be angry? Have you learned about your conduct? And then, of course, have you learned the exact nature of your wrongs? Because that's the information we're going to use to practice 6 and 7. Now, you could do a confession and analysis of things, but I have to understand my character. My character is an alcoholic, and we have the cards. I don't have to have Patty make some more cards, but we have the left and right-hand side, and they have the characteristics of a life run on self-will and the characteristics of God. Here, give me a card so I can hold it up. And then I know now that whenever I'm bothered or anything's bothering me, I'm over here. I'm separated from God. I'm back in self. And I've learned this from my 4-step because I see these things over and over and in. Case and I were just finishing his 4-step. It's the same things over and over again. Same things he has, I have. I still have them today, but I don't have to let them drive me anymore. And so I learned that I can practice the opposite. And this is what I learned in step 4, and I take to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs, because I want to be willing to let go of them so God can take them away. Can I live differently? And if I don't know that, I won't take 6 and 7. And I won't understand to really be able to work step 10 each day and inventory each day if I haven't done the inventory at step 4. So having said all that, we're now into action. And I was just looking at the first few paragraphs. We're not going to really cover that much today because I've blabbered enough already. But it says, having made our personal inventory. So we're inventorying our personality, self-centered, right? We're not doing confession. We're not listing our sins, although we may do it in that process. But we're looking at the thinking that caused my life to be a mess. And it says, well, what should we do about it? Now, they tell us what we've been trying to do. We're trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Now, my new attitude is the attitude that I'm wrong. The attitude that I may not be seeing things right. The attitude that I want to change from my negative attitudes to positive. I don't want to have fear, and I don't want to be angry. A new attitude that I need help, that I don't want to live the way I did. There's so many new attitudes we get. The new relationship with our Creator is that we're actually going to try to use our Creator in our lives. to, and we're going to use our Creator so he, I can have his power to change me, to be as he was, as he wants me to be, not as I created. And the new relationship begins with he's the director and I'm not. I'm just the actor. He's the father, I'm the child. He's in charge and I'm not. And when I have that relationship, then I put things in perspective. Now, to carry out that relationship, I need to inventory all the time to see when I'm playing God and when I'm not letting God be God and I'm directing the show. And then to discover the obstacles in our path. Notice the word path again. When our path to God, to a path to a relationship to our Creator, which gives me power to live. And the obstacles are my thinking. And we're looking at the obstacles in our thinking that produces the resentment and the fear and the conduct that calls me shame and guilt. Why? I need to know what the obstacles are to face and remove them, or else they're going to be there. They're still going to be there, and then I'm going to create new ones each day by not knowing how to let go of the things that are killing me. And so I can clear out all the obstacles from yesterday, but I can still find some today. And when they come up, that's when I work 6 and 7. And step 10 has specific instructions on how to do that each day. So in the fifth step, we're really looking at the obstacles in our whole life, trying to just clear the air a bit so we don't carry all this stuff into each day. And also we learn tools that we're going to use. Mark H. calls them these spiritual exercises that we use so that we get connected to our Creator. And it says, we have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. It says, now these are about to be cast out. Look at the word. They're going to be cast out. And cast out means that we're going to take them from in here and we're going to put them out there. They're not going to be dominating our lives anymore. And they're going to be cast out through our relationship with God. And actually, I wrote that we don't really remove the obstacles. They're cast out. They're kind of taken away once we're willing to let go of them. Now, I've said a million times that the whole program could be summarized in letting go, right? But I got a new insight on that. We only letting go is really an act of faith. I hadn't thought about it. When I say I'm going to let go and give it to you, God, I have faith and trust that it'll be taken away. So just the act of letting go is trusting your higher power and faith that he'll do it. Now, you don't know that in the beginning, but you're learning it in steps 4 and 5 because you're beginning to cast things out. You're beginning to let go of things. And you're seeing that they get removed. When you say the prayer for anger, and God save me from being angry at somebody you hated for 20 years, and within 5 minutes you see them differently, you see the power. And you've been afraid of things forever. And when you look at these fears and you see how they don't dominate you anymore. So they're going to be cast out. So I wrote, letting go is trust and faith. And then when I'm letting go, what I'm really saying is I want to be in the right now. And the right now is the present moment. And the present moment is where God is. So they said God can and will if you seek him. So I was thinking, when I seek God, where is he? You know, is he in the kitchen? Is he in the, you know, is he in the 1100 club? Where's God? But God is only in the present moment. And when you think about it, the stuff we're looking at in step 4 is everything that takes me out of the present moment. If I'm angry, I'm in fear, I'm not in the present moment. And so what we're trying to learn is how to keep these things in the past and the future from coming into the present moment. Now, they're still going to come in, but we learn through step 4 how to cast them out quickly so we don't stay there. And I thought about that. And so the whole point is how to be in the now and be in the present moment. And so that's my new mantra now. When I talk to myself, I say, well, that's not in the present moment. I'm not going to pay attention to that. Or that's not in the present moment. Go away. I know it sounds silly, but I don't know about you, but my mind talks to me a lot. And I've learned not to pay attention to most of it because it's just complete nonsense. The other thing I've learned, I heard it from a speaker, very powerful thing. He says, when I get these ideas, I don't know about you, but I get ideas. He says, you're supposed to ask the idea where it got its information. Now think about that, because it's usually nonsense. So anyway, I hope that was helpful. It says, now these are about to be cast out. Now to be cast out, it requires action on our part. I'm going to have to take action, which when completed, will mean that I've admitted to God, to myself, another human being, the exact nature of my defects. See, we're not going here to confess our sins. They come out in your fourth and fifth step, sure they do, but we want to know the exact nature of my wrongs, of my defects, and we call those character defects. We call those shortcomings, and that's our selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear and consideration, intolerance, judgment, envy, greed, lust, jealousy, go on and on. We've got about 25 on that card there. And we all have those things, and they're all triggered by self-centered fear. Self-centered fear triggers all of our character defects. So we learn a lot with this information. So this brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery. There it is again, mentioned in the preceding chapter. He says, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. You know, after you're around a while, it's not difficult, it's what we do. When people get together, we talk about, you know, how we were upset about this, but then we were able to let go, and how we only had to make two amends this week instead of 10. And, you know, I stopped at work, and I didn't strangle this lady, and instead I smiled, and I said, you know, it's going to be a good day. And I don't know if you know it, but we've learned a lot, and we know when our defects are coming up, but until I did the fourth and fifth step, I didn't know any of that. All I knew was that these people had done these things to me, and if you had them in your life, you would have drank too. And when you go to meetings and you hear new people, you hear that all the time. And they sound so convincing till you hear the other side, you see. And so we don't want to live like that anymore, do we?
No.
We don't want to live with our character defects dominating us. We're always going to have them, but we don't have to give power to them anymore. And it says, in actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. That's actually a comic remark. You know why? How can an alcoholic with an alcoholic mind do a solitary self-appraisal? Think about it. It's insane. Because our whole lives we've been doing solitary self-appraisals of the world and analysis of everything. And look how screwed up they are. So it's not sufficient. We have to put it down on paper. We have to look at it with someone else. Just the fact of writing it down is powerful. It gets us out of our mind. It says, many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We would be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. So they're going to give us some good reasons why we should do the fourth and fifth step, because they're really together. It says, if we skip this step, we may not overcome drinking. Now some people would say, well, do they really mean that? Yes, they really mean it. If we skip this vital, remember vital is necessary for life, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Now that's a new word. I've never seen it before in the book. Facts. And we think they're facts about our lives, but they're really distortions, aren't they? They're not usually even true. They're misconceptions, and we see them as facts. And then when we keep these facts in ourselves, they have power over us, and they're not really true. So one of the things is we learn that our facts really aren't true, and we learn to see the truth about our lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, and it is humbling, they have turned to easier methods. In the beginning, it's humbling, but after a while, you seek it. I was listening today on the seventh step read from the 12 and 12, and he talks about humility. We're going to cover that when we cover 6 and 7, we're going to do the 12 and 12 too. But this humility, we seek it. We seek the humility as something we really want. And so in the beginning it's hard, but after a while it's something you seek. They have turned to easier methods. Anybody try easier methods here? And almost invariably they got drunk. And usually they're your own easier methods. It says, having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. What do they mean by that? It says, excuse me, they took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. Notice thoughts in italic. But they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So I was thinking about, what do they mean by hanging on? Well, you're still holding on to some of your fears and some of your resentments and some of your shame, guilt, and you really haven't let go of it all. And so they want you to have humility, fearlessness, and honesty to be able to do that. And if you, most people who don't stay in the program drink because of resentment and fear, or they still have shame and guilt. And so it says you have to tell someone else all your life story. Now, I like the word story because a story could be fiction or nonfiction. And in the alcoholic, our story, a lot of it is fiction, although we saw it as nonfiction. It wasn't really true. We distorted things. And it's my story. And the thing is, my story has changed. When I came in, I would have had a very clear story of what was wrong with everybody in my life. And now, the story's changed a lot. It's changed dramatically. And in fact, I owed a lot of people amends that in my initial story really should have been executed. And so, nobody thought that was funny. But anyway, but your story, stop it. Your story when you come in is very distorted. It's a story, it's not true. And so, somebody said, you know, my childhood got better the longer I was in recovery. You know, the people change the way we see things. And actually that should be what's happening. If you're growing spiritually, you should be seeing things differently. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. Do you think that's true? Of course.
Yes.
We don't really want people to know what we're really like. We try to put on a good front at the meetings. We want everybody to think we're great, you know. But, you know, what's the truth? We're very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character, the one he likes to his fellows to see. All alcoholics have fear of disapproval, right? We all want to be good enough. We want people to like us. So we're not going to let people really see what we're really like because, and the other thing is we're afraid that if they get to see what we're really like, they won't like us or we're not good enough. It's none of that's really true. It's just the way we see it. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but here's the thing. We want a good reputation, but we know in our heart he doesn't deserve it. So we're an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And we can enjoy a good reputation. Everybody's telling us how wonderful we are, and inside we're saying, gee, I really don't deserve it. I don't know. It makes sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense to you. But it's a very sick way to live, isn't it? We want to be able to say the truth about ourselves and share with others and not have to put on a front. And so now when I'm in recovery, I'll call Stu and say, well, you know, had this crazy thought today, got angry about something stupid or had a stupid fear today. And we talk about it and how, and then he'll tell me about one of his fears, one of his angers. That's how we talk. And we share it. And we're quick to admit when we were wrong and when we need to change our way of thinking. And to me, a spiritual awakening is when I admit I'm wrong and I change the way I see things. And it makes me feel good. And I can't do that without God. I'll just read one more paragraph. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. It doesn't mean that it's only worse on the sprees, because sober is when really alcoholism strikes. But then we drink and we do really bad things when we're drunk, once the effect of alcohol. But when we're sober, that's when we do a lot of the worst things. Coming to a sense, he's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking. And I think this paragraph, sober or when you're drinking, if you live with these thoughts, you live without doing the fourth step and you're just sober, you still have the same tension, the same fears. And it's hard to stay physically sober unless you've done that. And then what we really want in AA is emotional sobriety, right? We want to have that peace and serenity. We want a relationship with our Creator. And we want to be useful to other people and ourselves. And we want to practice love and tolerance. So we don't want to stay that way. So this thing, the inconsistency, this is an example of these things that we keep inside. And I forgot to mention that we have that Memorial Wednesday from 4 to 7. And that was someone I know personally, because I worked with him a lot, that was under constant fear and tension. He just could not give up enough of him, his fear and tension, to even be able to let God in. It was very sad, and that's what happens to alcoholics. I think I'll end there, and then we'll pick up with some more on the fifth step next Sunday. And then we'll go do 6 and 7, and then we're going to listen to, then we're going to study the step 6 and 7 from the 12 and 12. Anyway, thank you.